Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today I have a really important guest on, someone I'm very excited to have back, because we have a lot of social issues happening, medical issues. Everything seems to be the perfect storm where they're all coming together. And I don't care if you're a student, a parent, an adult, a child, everybody's now being inundated with, I can't even describe it. It's hypocrisy on one level, it's cognitive dissonance on the other level, it's totalitarianism on one level. But I think the baseline is about control and about muzzling people. So today I wanted to have Ms. Jennifer Cabani on. She's the editor of the College Fix. She previously worked as a daily newspaper reporter and columnist for a decade in Southern California, and prior to that held editorial positions at the Weekly Standard, Washington Times, and Front Page magazine. She's also a Robert Novak Journalism Fellowship recipient and has contributed to the National Review. And she's been on my show maybe about a year ago, and I was really shocked the things that were going on the college campuses. But now it's left the college campus, it's going on the street. And so, Ms. Cabani, I wanted to thank you so much for spending time with us today. I can imagine how busy you are.
Hi, Dr. George. It's a pleasure. I will always make time for you and your audience.
Oh, you're a sweetheart. Well, let's get rolling, because I go on your website quite a bit, and I'm on your email mailing list, and people should do that. They should sign up for thecollegefix.com and sign up to get the newsletters, because these articles that are written are shocking. And before the show, we were both speaking about how we didn't think we could get worse. You know, you read something like, nothing else could be worse than this, but it just keeps getting crazier. And there seems to be no breaks on this. So what's going on the college campuses? I remember being in college and it was nothing like this. I mean, I think South Africa was our major social issue and divestment. But this has gone beyond that, hasn't it?
Oh, boy. What's going on college campuses today is so radical, so extreme. What these students are being taught, how they're being taught to view the world through the lenses of race, sexuality, and class, and politics. They are completely politicizing the campus and the classroom, pitting people against each other. And it's no longer true classical education. It is definitely indoctrination. No question about it.
Who's underdriving this? So the question I have is, where is it coming from? It's not like you... I mean, now it's a bit different because I think the media has jumped on board. But before Black Lives Matter movement on the streets, where was this coming from? Are the professors doing this? Is this social media ginning this up? How is this being aligned with actual classroom, what's offered as a curriculum, how the professors are literally deciding winners and losers and shutting people down? I mean, I remember, I guess the last time we spoke, we talked a little bit about the sexual side of this, where people are getting removed from classes and kicked out of school for sexual harassment that had no due process. But now this is a different standard. It's about your thoughts. You're not allowed to even think a certain way. Who's underwriting this thing that's happening?
So on one sense, you can trace it back to, you know, the radical times of the 60s where the, countercultural revolutionaries realized, hey, you know, let's infiltrate the classrooms, the campuses, and start to spread our ideology there. But more recently in the late 1980s, you had that historic time where Jesse Jackson led that chant of, hey, hey, ho, ho, Western Civ has got to go. And the idea that the Western civilization canon was somehow inherently, racist, began to spread even further, but it still hadn't taken root on such a wide scale as we see today, because what's happened is starting in the 90s with the attack against the Western civilization canon, and then really taking off in 2000s, and then from like 2010, these last decade, is identity politics has taken over the curriculum completely. You know, we had younger, more radical scholars taking over from their older counterparts who still, I think, you know, despite the way they thought and felt, wanted to offer a classroom that, you know, maybe offered both sides or allowed for that Socratic debate. But there's no longer a give and take in the classroom anymore. You know, the curriculums are all one-sided. You know, what the students are asked to read, you know, they have to censor their views. They can't, you know, speak up or write what they want in the essay for fear of being, you know, ostracized or graded down. You know, the radicals have taken over the classroom and shut down debate, shut down the Socratic method, and infused this notion of identity politics, of, you know, everything must be seen through the lens of race, class, sexism, sexuality, political views, and, you know, everybody is put into their tribe. And it's about power, really, and about control, and about teaching students to view the world as the haves and the have-nots. So it's really taken off in the last 20 years, mostly. But it has its roots in that social upheaval of the 60s and on through the last many decades.
Well, using that as your template, how on earth can the 1%, these are children who are in higher education, in college and universities that, you know, majority of our country have never gone to. They are the 1%. How do they divorce themselves from them being the entitled and the victim at the same time? It makes absolutely no sense.
Well, that's one of the things that, one of the arguments that are made, and I wish more college presidents and administrators and onlookers would say it, is, you are not oppressed. You are the most privileged person on the world. You have the world at your fingertip, opportunity at your fingertips, libraries full of knowledge, information at your fingertips, entrepreneurship, you know, wealth, opportunity. I mean, the fact that these kids feel that they are so oppressed when somebody looks at them wrong way just shows how completely out of step with reality they are, and that we cater to this, and that we say, yes, you are oppressed because somebody asked you where you're from, is absurd. So a lot of the responsibility lies on these college presidents and these administrators and these diversity bureaucrats who cater to and baby what amounts to a bunch of cry bullies. These young people are privileged cry bullies, and they are not oppressed, and more people should tell them so and tell them how incredibly privileged they are. It's really, they're living in la la land when you compare the opportunity that they have with these $60,000 a year, you know, tuition and all of the world ready to, you know, with the knowledge that they're gaining and the opportunity they have and the internships they have, compared to what really is oppression if you look at any third world country today.
But they're not even, I mean, we're going to take a break in about 30 seconds, but I want to put this out there. They're not interested in learning. I don't find that they're curious from an intellectual standpoint. It's just what they're told to say and think. And it's become so ridiculous. I mean, you're saying abolitionists are racist and ripping down statues, and the English language is racist, and so you have to forego any editorial standard, any English department talking about English being racist. I mean, it's just shocking. On that note, let's take our first break. You're Living in the Solution. Welcome back to Living in the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Jennifer Cabani, and before the break, you really made a really potent argument of the removal of reality from this absolute blind hatred. And I think it's self-hatred. And I have a question, and I'm not sure you can answer it, but I'm curious as to what you found in your research. Why are the white students self-hating and buying into this mindset of I'm guilty of because of the color of my skin? forget about Martin Luther King, right? Content of character means nothing in this system. It's all about how you look, and therefore you must think a certain way.
I think there's not one answer. I'll give you two answers, but there's probably more. I think on one hand, it's a death by a thousand cuts. I mean, from the minute they step on campus for freshman orientation, they're told if they're white, that they're privileged, and that they should be allies to their peers of color, and that they should shut up and listen. But then at the same time, they're told words are violence. So, you know, they really fed this dogma over and over and over again, and it's just beat into them. So on the one hand, there's that. But on the other hand, I think, if I may, there is a belief system where if you go into college as a freshman, as an empty sponge, and maybe you don't have a grounding in Judeo-Christian values, you know, I think this can almost become sort of like a religion or a belief where you get a sense of fulfillment out of, you know, castigating yourself at the altar of, you know, political correctness and, you know, oh, I am such a horrible white person, and let me, you know, bow to the altar of race relations and, you know, let me do all this to maybe feel something inside, you know, something to help them feel fulfilled, to feel like they're doing something to make the world a better place, you know, almost like a religion or a belief system in a way. Especially when we saw these videos of these, you know, young, white, rich, privileged kids yelling and screaming at, let's talk about it, black cops. I mean, you know, who do they think they are? But this, the fervent belief that they have, that they're doing this to break down the oppressor, there's almost like a religious fervor to it in a way, it seems to me.
I think you're absolutely right. And I've not only seen that on the college campuses, but recently, if you remember seeing the doctors who went up to DC, there was a interaction between the black physician and one of the protesters. And he said to her, I'm more black than you because, you know, I'm buying the party line and you're not. I mean, this is just, it's unbelievable. But where is the cooler heads? I mean, it's like it doesn't make sense. And it's making all of us, but I think that's the point, right? Hate each other, hate ourselves, need to be part of a whole. And whether it works against us and whether it's against our values as human beings, Christians, whomever, because it tends to work against everybody. The black people have to somehow feel like they're victims when they're not. The white people somehow have to feel like they're perpetrators and they're not. Who stands to gain from this? There's a bigger picture somehow that if we're all fighting amongst ourselves, someone's going to come in and control the whole shebang.
Yeah, well, the students are taught from the beginning, and this is infused in so many classes, whether it's English, history, political science, that America is an inherently racist country, that the founding fathers were not good men, that America was built on the backs of slaves. I mean, the 1619 Project tried to teach that the revolution was fought to maintain slavery. I mean, they're lying. They're lying. They're not putting things in context. They're not explaining the greater good that the founding fathers were trying to instill in the Constitution toward the greater good of ending slavery. You know, they never give any credit where credit's due in terms of our founding and the American exceptionalism that is inherent in this country and what it stands for. They're tearing it apart from the inside. I think Lincoln once said that great quote where if America falls, it's going to fall not on the shores of the Atlantic or the Pacific. It's going to fall because, you know, the death came from within. I mangled this quote horribly, but the point is this, the enemy is within. And what's the motivation, you ask? Well, I mean, again, it's control, it's socialism, it's Marxism. They want to have equality of outcome, right? At the end of the day, that's socialism, that's Marxism, and the Democrats are pushing that. They want the control, they want the vote, they want to tell people how to live, which I've never understood. What a depressing outlook on life, you know. I've never understood why you want to, like, oh, you know, capitalism, opportunity, entrepreneurship, you know, make your dream come true. That's all horrible. You know, I've never really understood the mindset of a radical leftist. But at any rate, they're just convinced that the only way to equality is if we crush everybody and make them equal on that low totem pole, which, of course, is absurd, because if you think about it, you know, the very government they're accusing of systemic racism, that's who they want in charge. But, you know.
Yeah, that's a perfect. Oh, my God. You just said the perfect thing. I mean, you talk about from a medical perspective, the government running the Tuskegee experiment, all these other things. If you want single payer, why? You know, you want someone to give you a vaccine as a mandate and it's never been tested. Why? But it's about equality of outcome. It's impossible. And if you look at the Marxist system, there's always those who are benefiting. Well, everybody's supposedly the same, but some are eating steaks, some get to travel, some get to dress really nicely, and everybody else is in the same soup. You're seeing this in various states where the governors are, they look really tanned and healthy, while the rest of the population is looking just wan because they're not allowed to go out of their houses or they're wearing these ridiculous masks. It's not a system that's designed for everybody to access it. It's some are like more equal than others in this system, and you're supposed to like it. That's where I get the question of what's up with that? It's mind control.
And you know, you have to keep in mind, these kids are taught that capitalism is evil, that socialism is the only way to ensure equality. And again, it becomes like a religious dogma for so many of them. And they're not taught the full, you know, what they're always told, well, socialism has never been, you know, tried, you know, correctly or whatever, you know, but all you have to look around is look at Venezuela, look at Cuba, you know, but they don't look at China, for example. Mm-hmm. I mean, you want to talk about, you know, depression, control. I mean, they're sending people to concentration camps. They're burning, blowing up churches. You know, they throw people in the prison camps. I mean, that's what they want. They want a communist government ruling us. You mentioned cognitive dissonance in the beginning of the show. You're right. It makes no sense. But yet this is what's drilled into them for years. The parents are paying for it, or they're taking out loans. They graduate with crushing debt, with no or few job prospects. They're angry, they're confused, they feel betrayed, you know, and then they lash out the only way they know how and the only way they've been taught. You know, I'm generalizing here, but that's so much of what we see nowadays. This whole country has so much opportunity and so much chance for people to strive for greatness, you know, to be all they can be, to that rugged individualism this country is founded on. But instead, you know, these leftist scholars and the Democrats just want to crush the spirit of America. And one of the major battlegrounds is the college campus where this is done. And that's why parents have to understand, you better think twice before you just send Johnny or Susie off to college. Not a second thought in the world, because they are going to be learning some stuff that you did not teach them.
Well, let's talk about the parents for a minute. What they have a dog in this hunt. How are they allowing their children to be indoctrinated and in most parts against them, right? These are middle-class parents for the most part who've played the system, been successful enough to be able to afford to send their kids to college. They're the enemy, according to what their children are learning. How do they reconcile that?
You know, I think, again, there's a combination of answers. I think there's a huge push on the K-12 system that if you don't send your kid to college, they're a loser, basically is what they tell you. You know, it's like, well, if you didn't go straight into college as a freshman, you must have failed as a parent. You know, so there's this idea, this mindset they try to push and hammer home. I think that's one of the reasons why folks like Mike Rowe are so popular, because parents are like, want a different, fresh perspective that it's okay to do vocational school. It's okay to do STEM. It's okay to do the military. It's okay to start off a couple of years at a city college where you work a job and figure out what your aptitudes are. I think this idea is growing more and more as folks realize that return on investment for, you know, college is dismal at best. But for a long time, that was the mantra. It's either college or you're a failure. And I think, thankfully, I think that that is no longer has such a vice grip on America, but for many years it was. Meanwhile, the more and more radicals were taking control of the schools. So by the time, you know, I think from 2010 to 2020, this really all came to a head. Finally, parents have been waking up and realizing, you know, whoa, whoa, whoa. But underscoring that, the one thing I always say at any radio show I do or television show I do, I always say that parents should not let their kids' teachers be their only teachers. You know, when my son is now a Marine, but when he was growing up, we constantly talked about what he learned in school. And I was constantly giving him the other side that he wasn't getting in class, you know. And I did that. We'd watch, you know, Dinesh D'Souza documentaries. We'd watch Hillsdale College videos. You know, we'd listen to Rush Limbaugh together, PragerU videos. I mean, there was one time I had him, he wanted to play video games all day. I said, okay, you watch 6 PragerU videos, and then you can go play video games all day. But basically, you know, just kind of countering that constant argument he got in the public schools with the knowledge he'd never get there so that he wouldn't fall for it, lion and sinker, you know. So again, parents have got to take a proactive role in being their kids' teachers and giving them the other side that they're not going to get in the public education system. It's the only way. That's the thing, is like, it's the only way we're gonna win this war, because you're not going to be able to. They're too entrenched. I got to say right now with higher education, they're too entrenched. It's I don't see a solution coming from within. The solution is going to come from outside somehow.
Well, is there a role for the government in terms of withholding funds? I mean, this is another shocking thing to me, that these universities have these endowments that are bigger than the GDP of countries, and yet they're still getting money from the government. How does that work? I'm giving you my taxpayer dollar for you to work against me. I don't understand why we can't withdraw that consent.
Well, you know, President Trump did start to say in some tweets that maybe it is time to look at the federal funding of these indoctrination camps and to pull back some of that. So, you know, it's easier said than done, but I think that, you know, it's people are starting to look at that more and more. There's another gentleman by the name of Stanley Kurtz, who's proposed a couple of common sense reforms that I think would also make sense. He's really pushing for, you know, that the apprenticeship sector has got to increase, that, you know, the way to end the higher education monopoly is to build up some sort of apprenticeship programs where, you know, these high school graduates can move into white collar jobs far more quickly. So again, vocational apprenticeships, you know, STEM opportunities that sort of sidestep higher education altogether, is another really powerful solution. He also proposes, you know, how the Second Amendment has NRA and, you know, for the issue of the unborn, you know, you have very strong advocacy groups like, you know, the Right to Life and National Right to Life and those sort of things. We need like a lobby of our own, like a higher education group that just constantly, pounds out this message to folks that, you know, that the higher education is broken and needs to be reformed. So, you know, essentially the NRA for higher education, right? Where we've got somebody out there pounding the pavement, lobbying and getting these lawmakers to take it seriously. And finally, you know, a lot of times when somebody reads an article on the College Fix and they get outraged, and rightly so, it's ridiculous, what's going on in higher education today. I want to bang my head against the wall like almost every other day when I'm reporting on this stuff. But at any rate, people read it and they get mad, and maybe they'll send an email to the professor. You know who you should really send the email to, the complaint to, is the trustees. Okay, the trustees of these these institutions of higher learning, because at the end of the day, the buck stops at the trustees, and they need to be made aware that this isn't just like a figurehead job where, you know, it's a nice cushy job and you get a handout, you know, athletic tickets to your buddies. You are in charge of this university, and you need to make sure that, you know, your students are getting a well-rounded education, hearing all sides, and are allowed to speak and be heard and to debate. So instead of firing off that angry email at the professor, next time fire it off at the board of trustees. I mean, and I guarantee you, I think that'll have a better impact in the long run. Because these trustees don't want to be hearing all sorts of these problems, and then they're going to hold the president accountable, and then things will get done, I think, better than, you know, the professor's just going to hit delete. They don't care. This is what they want to do, is to teach these students the way they think and to vote the way they want them to vote. So, you know, I think if people complain to them, it's not going to get anywhere.
On that note, let's take our second break. You're living in the solution.
No, I didn't move, but maybe I'm getting animated and getting excited and my head might be shaking around. So I'll try to keep my chin straight so that I'm not okay. So animated. Because sometimes when I get really excited, I move about. So I'll try to stand more still or sit more still.
Okay, fair enough.
You're getting me all fired up, Dr. George.
I know. I love it. That's exactly what the show's about. You got to get some sort of passion about this. Instead of saying, oh, nothing I can do. Well, you just described three things that we can do. So let's come back. 3, 2, 1. Welcome back to Living a Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Jennifer Cabani. And one of the things that you mentioned, three things that you mentioned that we can do to help ourselves and to break this monopoly, because it really feels like a monopoly. They have the money of the parents. They have the passion of the students. They have all of these things and these partial truths that are just being amplified. But I think you're right. It's always about who's got the biggest voice and money. And if we could get people from all walks of life who really want the ability to have freedom of choice, you can't be educated, really. You can't be a knowledgeable person if you only know one side of anything. That's not what education is supposed to be about. It's about exposure, right? So if we have people join something like an NRA, where people join as members and that voice gets to Congress, I think that would make a difference. And I didn't realize that the trustees had so much power. I guess they really do move the ship, you know, in terms of what the university stands for. And they're pretty, you don't know who they are unless you're an alumni, really. So getting to those people and letting them feel the heat would probably make a huge difference, quite frankly. And I think you're right. There's more than one way to make money in our society. You don't have to have an education to do it. I think most of these people who are multimillionaires and billionaires, there seems to be a lot of them who never finished college, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, Elon Musk, Peter Thiel, they're both college dropouts. But in terms of contacting trustees, obviously professors have academic freedom, but what the trustees could do is they could demand that, you know, the faculty hiring committees consider political ideology diversity instead of just skin color. You know, is it okay to have a couple of conservatives on the roster? Would it really kill you guys to let one or two conservatives in at the end of the day? Because they're all about diversity, this, diversity, that. But what about, you know, political diversity? So that's what I'm saying. You know, you can never, under academic freedom, you can't tell a professor what to teach. But you can at least force them to offer both sides of the issue. And I think that's where pressuring the trustees could be effective. With the education aspect, there's so much to be done. Vocational opportunities, STEM opportunities, coding opportunities in today's technological age. You know, things change at a drop of a hat. Look at my husband. My husband works in the IT field, and he gained almost all of his knowledge on the job experience. When it comes to tech stuff, you're learning on the job. Things change so fast. So, you know, these young people understand that. Look at did you hear about the guy that hacked Twitter? Remember, and he had all those Twitter accounts sending money to his Bitcoin. He was 18. He was 18, for goodness sake. I mean, you know, these are the kind of, I mean, I joke about it, but again, you know, the technological advancements that are coming up, these young people understand, and you don't need to sit through your critical studies to learn how to, you know, become a whiz on computers, you know? So, I mean, if you look at like Cal State University recently, now require, you know, a social justice class to graduate. And, you know, you're paying for that. You know, this is your valuable time. Instead, you know, again, just try to find a different way around this. Find those vocational opportunities. Find those ways to learn on the job. maybe spend some time, you know, taking City College classes and having a job and just finding your aptitude, or heck, go into the military like my son. But you do not need to start at a four-year college as a freshman to be successful. You know, that this mantra has got to be broken, and parents have to realize the wealth of opportunity. This is America. It's the land of opportunity. Of course, you can't say that on a college campus. I don't know if your listeners know that, but if you say America is the land of opportunity, that's considered a racial microaggression, because you're discounting the experience, the lived experience of others or something or so on. So, you know, they really got this thing locked down. But I'm here to tell you, America is still the land of opportunity. And there's plenty of ways to grasp at that. And you don't have to, you know, hand or fork over $50,000 to $100,000 of your money to these indoctrination camps to get there.
That is just amazing. And this is not a small sum of money. We're talking $100,000 or more by the time you've exited the campus. With what knowledge? I mean, how much are you going to be able to go out and tell your boss, you know, you're racist, so you need to pay me and I don't need to. I mean, I don't understand what their mindset is. What do they do when they're out? What do they expect? They don't really want to open their own. And I don't think it's, I mean, if you have to have a lot of gumption to do things on your own and not want help from the government, how are they going to survive? The government is going bankrupt. We're in an economic crisis. What are these guys going to do all day? They just want to get sustainable income, which is going to be less than welfare. There's no way you're going to live well on sustainable income. But, you know, you mentioned before the break China, and I want to delve into that a little bit, because it's always a mantra of mine that you need to follow the money. If this is a Marxist and socialist bent to the universities, is that because they're literally getting money to underwrite this? I mean, China is giving money through the Confucius Institutes, these partnerships with scientists to go and share their research with Chinese counterparts. And I think there's a college in California, it's got like 53 million, was it Stanford? 53 million from China. Well, they're going to do whatever you want them to do for the money. And it should. And if they have an endowment, which I'm sure I can choke a horse, why on earth do they need to get money from outside the country when they're getting government money too? I don't get that. What's your thought?
Yeah, this ChinaGate thing is a huge problem. You know, Stanford, yeah, you're right, $58 million over the last decade or so from China. And meanwhile, they're talking about human rights and civil rights. Have they looked across the Pacific Ocean at what China is doing? I mean, they're one of the worst abusers of human rights on the globe. But they turn a blind eye to that and collect the money. That shows what a hypocrite Stanford University and all these universities are that have these partnerships with China. But, you know, the other problem is China is stealing our intellectual property. They're stealing our research. They have professors embedded in universities across the nation. Now, more recently, the Justice Department, the FBI have been arresting and charging and indicting these professors as they've come to find it. But it was a real, think about this, that Charles Lieber, Dr. Charles Lieber of Harvard University, he was the head of the Wuhan Institute of Technology. Wuhan, does that ring a bell? I don't know what was going on over there. We don't need to go down that rabbit hole. But my point is this, they have our best and brightest, some of our best and brightest, China does, funneling our technology, our intellectual property back to China. And it's a very insidious thing. And finally, under the Trump administration, we're cracking down on that. But some of that damage has already been done. And if you Google China under our search engine, you'll see how many stories we've written about the influence that country has on our American higher education system. And the hypocrisy of these universities for taking Chinese money and pretending to care about human rights.
I think you're absolutely right. But America's the worst person in the world. And we had slave owners and blah, blah, blah. But you're literally...
Dr. George, but again, there's no country in the globe in the history of mankind that didn't have slavery. You know?
That's true.
But these young people are convinced that America invented slavery. I'm not making this up. One of the most popular articles on our website a few years ago was this professor who used to quiz his students every year coming into his class what they knew. They think America invented slavery.
Yeah.
Do you see, this is what they're being taught, that the slavery is an American idea, when in fact it's a global that spans humanity from the ancient Egyptians on up. And they're so mad at Christopher Columbus, but the Native Americans enslaved each other as well. You know,
yeah.
I mean, look, again, it's all in context, you know, but they don't teach the conquest paradigm that was prevalent back then. And they always just make out America to be the bad guys, which, again, is a political tool to, you know, drive this country apart, to tear us apart, and to elect more Democrats and to install in socialism in America. I mean, I think that's the end goal. That's what they really want. I don't know why it's never been successful. Again, I can't pretend to understand the mind of a radical leftist, but I can tell you that that's part of the overall plan and goal. Convince these young people that America is evil, you know, that it invented slavery, that it was built on slavery, you know, twist the ideals, twist the founding fathers' words, make them resent their nation, resent their heritage, lie about Republicans,
mm-hmm.
say whatever they want about Donald Trump. And these kids come out angry, confused, and empty, looking for answers and solutions that didn't need to be a problem in the first place. Because at the end of the day, we're all Americans. And that's what I tell my 12-year-old daughter when she's watching the news and she's like confused about what's going on. I say, you know what? You know, whatever the color of your skin, we're all Americans. And that's what we should be focused on, that we're all batting for the same team. And we should all have the goal of improving the lives for everybody and stop pitting, you know, people against each other. But that's all the colleges do, is just pit people in different tribes and make them war against each other. It's really quite insidious, if you think about it. It's depressing.
Well, so. I think it's a call to action for those of us who are realists and who know history. It's our job at this moment in time to not back down and let these people have the narrative. On that note, let's take our final break. You're Living in the Solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Jennifer Cabani, and people need to go to thecollegefix.com to read the articles and also sign up for the newsletter. And the interesting thing about your website is that these articles are written by students. It's not somebody, you know, parachuting in. These are students who are living this on these college campuses who are writing their experience. So we're getting a real-time view, not this filter from the media. They just highlight the worst-case scenario and the most vociferous, and they literally can shape the narrative because they don't show the whole picture. There's an article that came out that I read about a student who is supposed to matriculate at Marquette, but she had a TikTok where she talked about her, you know, backing Donald Trump and, you know, having her own opinion. Now they don't want to offer her her admission. I mean, what kind of thing? Can you actually get away with that? I think people here are too nice. We need to start suing people for our rights. If we don't expect these guys to be nice and to be cordial, that's pretty obvious now. It's never going to happen. You have to take your power back.
Absolutely. So I have two responses on that front. One, there is hope. I don't want to leave everybody feeling hopeless. We do have a large group of young people who are being taught the truth, being taught a wider perspective, being instructed in the traditions of American exceptionalism and what this country was truly founded on. And they are fighting back and they are pushing back. And there is a large subset of America who is not going to go down without a fight. And we work with many young people at the College Fix to train up these young journalists to, well, help, you know, because the mainstream media is a train wreck, right? So we train these young people how to cover the stories that other people aren't covering, to tell the stories that would otherwise the left would want hidden. And so we're not only exposing the campus, but we're also trying to train up the next generation of journalists. So that's one thing. But underscoring that, you have to keep in mind that with these college campuses, their end goal, This is a battleground. This is a battle for the hearts and minds of America. So yes, if the college sees a young person post on TikTok or Instagram something, now it's getting to the point, very scary. This is, kids are doing this on their own time, has nothing to do with what they're doing on campus. But yes, the campuses are punishing them for their social media posts. It's crazy. It's something out of, you know, George Orwell. We're literally living in 1984 now, where your private social media posts done on your own time become purview for your campus to punish you for an act of hate. We had a student who wrote a column on his own personal website saying how he loves America and he criticized the Black Lives Matter movement. This is at Georgetown, and his student government voted to censure him and called on the campus to file bias reports against him. We have a young Chinese immigrant at Fordham University who posted on the anniversary of Tiananmen Square, you know, a pro-freedom message. His university sanctioned him and tried to give him some re-education. But guess what? He filed a lawsuit against them. It's our top story today. He filed a lawsuit against Fordham for infringing on his First Amendment rights. And good for him. And more people should. We had a huge article last week about the students that were kind of tussled up at Binghamton University last fall because they were tabling with pro-Trump material. And this crowd of progressive students kind of attacked them, really. Got in their faces, ripped up their stuff, threw over their table, crashed their event, shut down their speaker, their conservative speaker. Well, that was last fall, but guess what? They just sued them. They just sued the university. So you know what, Dr. George? More and more people are fighting back. So there is hope. There's a lot of hope, and we have to keep fighting for them and for our young people. And I think about my unborn grandchildren. What kind of country are they going to inherit? So that's why, even though I sometimes get discouraged, because I mean, if you read the College Fix every day, there's a lot of shenanigans we're highlighting. But you know what? Yeah. We're fighting the good fight along with everybody else, and we're fighting for this country, for our young people, and that's who we're trying to save it for.
Well, I love it, and I applaud your effort, and I love the fact that these kids are finally getting their back up, and we have the power. This is about the Bill of Rights and the Constitution and the First Amendment. How on earth can somebody, after being accepted into the university, be basically browbeaten or intimidated into, by, I guess they hope that she'll just withdraw her own matriculation or her own acceptance, and I'm sure she's not going to do that. But if they do try to take away that right to go to the university after they accepted you because of a private social media page, first of all, how on earth do they have access to that? It's kind of scary. And then all the kids in the university, well, not all the kids, but the people who are against her are now threatening her. And in my opinion, if the university allows that to happen, they're complicit and they should be sued, because this is intimidation, right? They're threatening to kill the girl. This doesn't even make sense to me. And the university is, she's the bad guy. So I think, yeah, I love the fact that, I guess I forget the young kid who won the suit against CNN and the rest of the media about making it seem as if he was intimidating the Native American man at the, in the Capitol, you know, in DC, and he won his suit. And that's going to change the standard. I think you can't just malign people. You can't take their livelihood without some sort of consequence, because there has been none to this point. It's just been an onslaught. And now I think people need to have the pendulum swing back, fight on every single front. And that doesn't mean physically. That means get in the courts. People understand their pocketbook getting dinged. They all get that. Maybe we should have that as our first go-to instead of being nice and turning the other cheek. I'm not a big fan of that at this point.
Well, too much is at stake, right? I mean, the freedoms that this whole entire country was built on, the ideals, the principles, you know, they're in jeopardy. And yeah, we have to fight for that, as so many people before us fought for that. And it goes without saying that a lot of times it's not like just like the Democrats are the bad guys and the Republicans are the good guys. You know, there's some Republicans at whose feet need to be held to the fire too. So we need to be informed. We need to be engaged. You know, websites like the College Fix help keep us on tabs on the higher education front, a huge battleground. You know, we've got the mainstream media that we have to hold to task. We have pop culture that we have to hold to task. Boy, there's a lot of there's a lot of things that are coming at us hard and fast, and we got a big war ahead of us. But I think at the end of the day, again, I have got to come back to that message that parenting, good mom and a good dad is going to be what saved this country, because they are going to bring up their kids with the knowledge and the tools and the information so that when they hear something in the news or when they hear something from the professor in the classroom or in a textbook, they're discerning. They're discerning, yeah. And they say, hey, wait a minute now. My mom and dad told me X and Y and Z, and it doesn't have, you know, so they can red flag the BS, right? And that, mm-hmm. that is everything from this COVID stuff that we're facing now to the race baiting that the left is trying to shove down our throats, to the cancel culture stuff. You know, even right down to the Biden versus Trump, you know, these kids can make up their own mind because they've learned how to be, you know, cautious and discerning of what is being shoved down their throats and process it on their own. And, you know, hey, look, maybe they agree with the left, and that's fine too. You can't force your kid to be which way or that, but you can at least give them an education, a well-rounded education, so they have a fighting chance. So I'm a big advocate that parents are the solution. Good parenting and proactive parenting is going to save this country, Dr. George.
I absolutely agree. You can't, that's your job, right? That's your personal responsibility, is to make a citizen and an informed citizen. If we don't do that, then the people who are puppet masters up there making people veer from one emotional catastrophe to the next, they are the ones that win. I don't believe in Republican and Democrat. It's us against them, because it's ultimately the power is shifting between those two entities, but they're two sides of the same coin. But we're the ones on the front line. You know, we're the ones that are going to be, I hope not, but if they try to force us to take vaccines or to live in a certain way or muzzle us or take away our Second Amendment rights, they're the ones that stand to gain, because we're powerless emotionally, physically, and mentally. That's their goal. And it's really just like being put upon for at least, but especially for the last 4 months. You have to be mentally strong. And I think you have to have a relationship with God and with your family to know that there's something bigger, something better than this. And these guys are saying all sorts of things that make no sense, just like the college campuses. America's horrible, but China's awesome. Really? You just described why all the things that they do, and you're trying to fight for that system when it's the antithesis of what you say. And even one in Congress, what was his face? Hillary Clinton's vice president running mate. He said that America's the only one who did slavery. I mean, this is coming from on high. It's like this is its
I'm telling you, that's what they're trying to do. They're changing history. This is Orwell. They're literally changing history, distorting it, lying about it, you're cherry picking it. Thankfully the 1619 thing has been thoroughly debunked, even though they're offering it in some schools. But one of the senators from, I think Howley from Missouri, sponsored a bill that said it was going to strip federal funding to schools that want to, or take away the funding for schools that want to teach the 1619 curriculum. Not take away all their funding, but that the feds wouldn't pay for teaching 1619 in schools. So it's good that some Republican senators are out there fighting the fight and doing what they can to protect these young minds. But boy, the left is not going to give up easily. And we're in it for the long haul.
Well, I think it's also the mindset of stop buying into being made into the bad guy. You know your heart. You know you're not racist or sexist or whatever. Why are you letting someone define you? Why are you being silent when someone's attacking you? Your who you are, your credibility, your heart. They don't know it. And as long as we allow that anger to be literally just hurled with impunity and backed up now physically with the Antifa movement, this is just outrageous. And we need to start suing the government too. So if your senator or your congressperson or your mayor is not protecting you, then you need to have put them on the hook for a suit too. I have a right as a business owner, as an American citizen, to walk down the street, open my business without it being attacked and not being protected by the police or the government and them egging it on. That needs to stop too, because it's a way to really make us physically afraid. And you're basically not going to speak up if you're afraid that you're going to have to bear the brunt of someone attacking you. Now, we have 1 minute left, but I want to make sure people know how to reach you and get on the website.
Thank you. So it's thecollegefix.com. We also have a Facebook page. We have a Twitter page. We're on Parler now. We do post YouTube videos, and we have an email newsletter you can sign up. And I don't bombard your inbox. I only send it out twice a week, but I try to respect your time and give you a good highlight reel. But you can sign up for our newsletter on the website and stay abreast of all the latest shenanigans on college campuses. There is never a dull moment. I can assure you of that much.
I can confirm that as a reader. I want to thank you so much, Jennifer, for coming on. I just love having you on. You're so passionate, knowledgeable, and you're brave, because we're not going to give up this fight. This is a fight for our future, our children's future, and our country's future. And I'm not going to let it go. I know you're not. And we're not alone. And I think people need to know that.
Well, Dr. George, I want to thank you too, because you're a brave truth teller, and I appreciate what you do.
Well, thank you. I couldn't do anything else, really. On that note, thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.